namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Vasudevaya.
We welcome back the pilgrims as well.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 4, The Appearance of Sri Narada, text number 14. Sukuru Vacha
Tva
Pare Samanu Prapte
Chittiye
Yuga Paryaye
Jata
Parasarad Yogi
Vasavyam Kalaya Harahe.
Sutru Vacha.
Sutra
Goswami said,
Dvapare,
in the second millennium,
Samanuprapte,
on the advent of
Tritiye,
third.
Yuga,
millennium,
Pariyaye,
in the place of
Jataha,
was begotten,
Parasarat,
by Parasara,
Yogi,
the great sage,
Vasavyam,
in the womb
of the daughter of Vasu,
Kalaya, in the plenary portion,
Hare,
of the personality of Godhead.
Sudha
Goswami said, when the second millennium overlapped the third, the great sage Vyasadeva was born to Parasara in the womb of Satyavati, the daughter of Vasu. Purport. There is a chronological order of the four millenniums, namely Satya, Dwapara, Treta and Kali, but sometimes there is overlapping. During the regime of Vaivasvata Manu, there was an overlapping of the 28th round of the fourth millenniums, and the third millennium appeared prior to the second. In that particular millennium, Lord Sri Krishna also descends, and because of this, there was some particular alteration. The mother of the great sage was Satyavati, the daughter of the Vasu fisherman, and the father was the great Parasara Muni. That is the history of Vyasadeva's birth. Every millennium is divided into three periods, and each period is called a Sandhya. Vyasadeva appeared in the third sanja of that particular age. Text 15.
Sakata chit sarasvatya upasprisya jalam suchihi vivikta eka asina udite ravi mandale.
Once upon a time, he, Vyasadeva, as the sun rose, took his morning ablution in the waters of the Sarasvati and sat alone to concentrate. Purport. The river Sarasvati is flowing in the Bhadrika Ashram area of the Himalayas. So the place indicated here is Samyaprash in Bhadrika Ashram, where Sri Vyasadeva is residing. Text 16.
Paravarat Vyasa Rishi Kalaneva Vyakta Ramhasa Yuga Dharma Vyaktikaram Praptam Bhuvi Yuga Yuga.
The great sage Vyasadeva saw anomalies in the duties of the millennium. This happens on the earth in different ages due to unseen forces in the course of time. Purport. The great sages like Vyasadeva are liberated souls, and therefore they can see clearly past and future. Thus he could see the future anomalies in the Kali age. And accordingly he made arrangement for the people in general so that they can execute a progressive life in this age which is full of darkness. The people in general in this age of Kali are too much interested in matter which is temporary. Because of ignorance they are unable to evaluate the assets of life and be enlightened in spiritual knowledge. Bhautikanam Chabhavanam, this is text 17 and 18. Shakti Hrasam Chatakritam Asradhanan Ni Satvan Dumedhan Trasitayushaha. Durbhagams cha janan viksya munir divjena chakshusha sarvavanas rama manam yad dadyo hitam amogadrik. The great sage who was fully equipped in knowledge, through his transcendental vision, Amogadrik, the great sage who was fully equipped in knowledge could see through his transcendental vision the deterioration of everything material due to the influence of the age. He could also see that the faithless people in general would be reduced in duration of life. Trasitayushaha. Asradhanam means faithless. Nisattvam. Nisattvam. If sattva is goodness and nisattvam, what's that mean? No goodness. Lacking goodness. He could also see that the faithless people in general will be reduced in duration of life and will be impatient due to lack of goodness. Thus he contemplated for the welfare of men in all statuses and orders of life. Purport. The unmanifested forces of time are so powerful that they reduce all matter to oblivion in due course. In Kali Yuga, the last millennium of a round of four millenniums, the power of all material objects deteriorates by the influence of time. In this age, the duration of the material body of the people in general is much reduced, and so is the memory. Is everybody listening? Because we'll be testing your memory later. See if we can prove Prabhupada wrong. Although, you know, remembering something 5 minutes ago is not a great feat. The action of matter has also not so much incentive. The land does not produce food grains in the same proportions as it did in other ages. The cow does not give as much milk as it used to give formerly. The production of vegetables and fruits is less than before. As such, all living beings, both men and animals, do not have sumptuous, nourishing food. Due to want of so many necessities of life, naturally the duration of life is reduced. The memory is short. Intelligence is meager. Mutual dealings are full of hypocrisy, and so on. The great sage Vyasadeva could see this by his transcendental vision. As an astrologer can see the future fate of a man, or an astronomer can foretell the solar and lunar eclipses, those liberated souls who can see through the scriptures can foretell the future of all mankind. They can see this due to their sharp vision of spiritual attainment. And all such transcendentalists who are naturally devotees of the Lord are always eager to render welfare service to the people in general. They are the real friends of the people in general, not the so-called public leaders who are unable to see what is going to happen 5 minutes ahead. In this age, the people in general, as well as their so-called leaders, are all unlucky fellows, faithless in spiritual knowledge and influenced by the age of Kali. They are always disturbed by various diseases. For example, in the present age, there are so many TB patients and TB hospitals, but formerly this was not so because the time was not so unfavourable. The unfortunate men of this age are always reluctant to give a reception to the transcendentalists who are representatives of Srila Vyasadeva, and selfless workers always busy in planning something which may help everyone in all statuses and orders of life. The greatest philanthropists are those transcendentalists who represent the mission of Vyas, Narada, Madhava, Chaitanya, Rupa, Sarasvati, etc. They are all one and the same. The personalities may be different, but the aim of the mission is one and the same, namely to deliver the fallen souls back home, back to Godhead. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam Mukam Karoti Vatsalam Pangum Langayate Grim Yatkripa Tamaham Mande Sri Gurum Jinatarinam. We have a description of Vyasadeva's appearance and a description of how there's an overlapping of the different yugas, which is a special circumstance, and how at that time Vyasadeva appeared. Of course, Vyasadeva is special. Personality is mentioned here. Kalaya Hare. Plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. So Vyasadeva is a special incarnation of the Lord who appears for a purpose. He divided the Vedas, compiled them, and created the various sections of the Vedas and then distributed them to his disciples. Basically because he could see the coming of the Kali Yuga and that people's ability to understand, to appreciate, to accept spiritual life and the pursuit of self-realization would be difficult, as mentioned here. The Kali Yuga is a special occasion, a special time. One of the devotees was asking me the other day, the ingredients should be all the same. The molecules and atoms and everything should all be the same. So why is the Kali Yuga worse off? The material ingredients should be the same. Of course, Prabhupada gives the example of a watch or a clock that's wound up, winding down. And so as it winds down and the spring becomes lax or loose, you know, it's the same spring, but it's not tightly bound. It doesn't have the same shakti, the same potency. So as the yugas wind down, then the whole material atmosphere loses its power. Until at the end of the Kali Yuga, it gets wound back up again, and then it has its vibrancy or its potency. And so because of the material energy doesn't have that same impetus, if you like, or Prabhupada mentions here incentive. Incentive, there's no incentive. Then the quality and power of material objects is diminished. Reduces. And Prabhupada gives an explanation here why that happens. Then as a result, why the quality of people is not as elevated. Basically he's saying here the food's not as good. The land does not produce food grains in the same proportions. The cow does not give as much milk. The production of vegetables and fruits is less than before. And these are the basic necessities of life. If you don't eat well, then you don't live well. You know, it's hard for us to conceive of living for 1,000 years. Could you imagine living for 1,000 years? By the time we get to 60, we're creaking, groaning and moaning. Actually, you know, by the time we get to 30, we think we're finished. But the quality of... And then in the previous yuga, people were living for 10,000 years. The quality of existence was so... There's so much potency. The food is better, the atmosphere is better, the air is cleaner. So as a result of the degradation in the, you know, the natural, physical propensities, then also the mental... and emotional capacity is reduced as well. So, you know, people are basically reduced to animals, effectively. You know, dull-headed like an animal. So if you talk to them about spiritual subject matter, they can't understand it. It's like talking to an animal. We've discussed this many times. You know, you don't preach to the dog. Although Prabhupada mentions, sadhus are merciful to everybody, even the animals. And there are examples of, you know, dogs going back home, back to Godhead, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's the dog of Shivananda Shane. Huh? And the devotees came and Lord Chaitanya was feeding him prasadam and telling him to chant Hare Krishna. Then the next day the dog had disappeared. But generally speaking, we don't preach to animals. Well, we give them prasadam, that's appropriate. And in fact, you know, for a lot of people, that's what we do also. Right? Give them prasadam. That's how we elevate, you know, that's unfortunate. They're not able to, you know, in the previous ages people could hear. And having heard, they'd remember. With the advent of Kali Yuga, Vyasadeva could see people are not going to be able to remember But they won't have the capacity to hear, and as a result of not having the capacity to hear, that means they can't hold that information. So therefore the Vedas needed to be written down. Previously, the Vedas were an oral transmission. The guru would speak, the disciple would hear. Having heard, the disciple would remember. You know, in this day and age, people don't want to remember. Oh, I forgot. Right? Because they didn't want to do it. Didn't I tell you to do something? Oh, I forgot. So not only can't they hear, they don't want to either. But how many times did you receive an instruction from your father that you didn't want to hear? And so you forgot it. So there's also, you know, there's the lack of capacity plus the desire is not there. The desires are, you know, people are very much influenced by the motive pattern, by the lower modes of material nature. And as a result of the influence of in the previous yugas, especially say, in such a yuga, then the predominant influence was sattva, goodness. That was the predominant influence. And so the aspirations of people were spiritual advancement. That was valued. That's what was valued. It was making progress in spiritual life. Material acquisition wasn't, you know, because the atmosphere was surcharged with goodness, the food was good, the weather was good, you know, everything was influenced by the mode of goodness. So then the necessity to worry about material things was diminished. It was easy to live. Because everything is now reduced, then it's hard to live. It requires struggle, you know, struggle for existence. So people's consciousness is more focused on, you know, just basics, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Of course, that's the behaviour of the animals. Whereas in a previous, in those yugas where the mode of goodness was prominent or more prominent, then the emphasis was on making spiritual progress, spiritual advancement. So Vyasadeva could see this, the pending age of Kali. And Prabhupada gives the example here. By his transcendental vision, Saravavanash Ramanam Yad Dadyo Hitam Amoga Drik. Dadyo means he was contemplating, he was meditating. What was he meditating on? Hitam. The welfare of who? Saravavanash Ramanam Yad. He was meditating on the welfare of everyone. All varnas and all ashrams. As a result of his amoga drik, his transcendental, his spiritual vision. The Prabhupada gives the example here. Just as an astrologer can look at a person's chart and then predict what will happen in the future. You know, when a person is born, then a measurement is taken of all of the planets. And then from the placing of the planets and the stars, sun, the moon, this, that and the other, then by looking at those placements, an astrologer, properly trained astrologer who's studied the Jyotish, can predict what will happen, what this person's character and future will be. Right? You know, in the 60s and the 70s, there was a modern modern psychology movement, basically, you know, there was a song actually by a group called I won't even mention their names, not particularly relevant I suppose, but anyway, that one of the lines of the song was, be what you want to be, do what you want to do, yeah, that's the philosophy, right? Be what you want to be, do what you want to do. That was the mood of the 60s and the 70s. But after a while, people discovered that you couldn't be what you want to be and do what you want to do. You're restricted. You know, you may want, you know, the example that I like to give, you may be an ant and you want to jump over the Empire State Building, but you're not going to. You'll be restricted. And so people realise, and so there was this resurgence, actually, of interest in things like Vedic astrology and Jyotish, because then people realise we're restricted. So how are we restricted? What are the influences? What do we have to work with? And the Jyotish can tell us. Here's what we're restricted by, and here's our opportunities, so that a person can take advantage of the opportunities and try to minimise the or at least tolerate the negative aspects. An astronomer can predict the future. In fact, we know that this coming full moon, there's going to be a full lunar eclipse. We know exactly what time it will be and when it will finish and where it will be observed. So an astronomer can predict the future. So similarly also, the transcendentalists, the sages, the saints, or even us, anybody who's a devotee, practically speaking, can also predict the future. How do they predict the future? What does Prabhupada say in the, what did Prabhupada say in the purport that a devotee, liberated soul, we're assuming we're devotees and that means we're liberated, right? How do we tell the future? How does a liberated soul tell the future? Very important. Huh? Through the vision of Shastra, yes. Prabhupada says here, those liberated souls who can see through the scriptures can foretell the future of all mankind. They can see this through their sharp vision of spiritual attainment. This is important because the future is described within the Veda, especially in the Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is written specifically for this age. You know, what will happen when Krishna has departed? What will happen when there is no knowledge or religiosity? Where will people get their enlightenment from? There's a few verses before here. And the Bhagavatam says, from the Bhagavatam itself, this is how we'll get our enlightenment. And the Bhagavatam is warning us. Here is what happens in the Kali age. And of course we're seeing it. We're also experiencing it. We're living in it. So the Bhagavatam is predicting it and we're seeing it. So it's being established for us. But of course, the advantage of the Bhagavatam is that one can take advantage of the instructions within the Bhagavatam. And by taking advantage of those instructions, by following the guidelines of the Srimad Bhagavatam, one will become spiritually advanced. Despite all of the negativity, if one takes shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, then one will become a liberated soul. This is extremely important information that we should take advantage of. Why we study Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. Nashta Priyeshava Bhadreshu Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. Why we render service to the Bhagavatam every day. Nitya Bhagavata say. Why? Because the Bhagavatam removes all of the inauspicious qualities, practically speaking. And so, you know, Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas for the benefit of everybody, but specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled for the self-realization of everyone. Not everyone takes advantage of it, but that's what it's for. Unique. And so as a result of taking advantage of this scripture, we're able to cultivate our, well, it says it, Prabhupada says here in the purport, sharp vision. And in Kali Yuga you need sharp vision. Right? Because there's so much bewilderment and cheating and lack of spiritual focus, the influence of the age, the influence of the people, our own disqualifications. He upadrutaha, as mentioned earlier on. Upadrutaha means disturbed. Above, always disturbed. You know, quarrel at the drop of a hat, or dispute over minor things that are insignificant. So, you know, Kali Yuga is very powerful, but there's some good qualities. One of them is the presence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Anybody who comes in contact with the Srimad Bhagavatam is very, very, very fortunate. You know, having the Bhagavatam in your house is as good as having Lord Narayan present. Right? It's as good as having the Lord personally present in your house. Because we just ignore him, it's just a book sitting on the shelf. So we just, oh, there's the Bhagavatam. But actually, it's as good as having Krishna in your house. The only thing is you have to take him off the shelf and open it up and read it. You know, we can, just as you know, you can have the deity in your house, but if you ignore it and don't render any service, then where's the benefit? Right? Sometimes the householders have deities in their house that they don't, you know, they just sit there gathering dust. Become too busy to worship Krishna. It happens. Or we have the Bhagavatam sitting on the shelf, but we don't take advantage. And so therefore we lose sight of the benefit, the potency. But if one wants sharp vision, and you need sharp vision in this day and age, even amongst the devotees, confusion arises. Emphasis of the wrong things, or too much emphasis on this and not enough emphasis on another. So Vyasadeva's looking into the future and he's saying, oh, look at the quality of the, and this is the character of a devotee, or character of a transcendentalist, and that's what Prabhupada talks about in the next paragraph. He says, all such transcendentalists, and so with this spiritual vision we can see into the future. And the future is what? What's the future look like in Kali Yuga? Dark, bleak, not a lot of promise. Dangerous. So those with that vision, the transcendentalists who are naturally devotees of the Lord, this is one of the qualities of a transcendentalist. Not just, you know, as Prabhupada says, not a person who grows a beard and meditates in the Himalayas. Um, who are naturally devotees of the Lord, are always eager to render welfare service to the people in general. So they're thinking about, you know, the devotees think about their own welfare, certainly, but they think, they meditate. The advanced transcendentalists meditate on the welfare of others. They don't just think about themselves. They are the real friends of the people in general, not the so-called public leaders who are unable to see what is going to happen 5 minutes ahead, just like at the moment, you know, we have governments who are supposed to be our friends. But at the moment, we have such a mess in the economic system, they don't know whether some countries are going to be able to pay their bills next week. Right? You know, we vote, of course, we get what we deserve. We vote these people in. Right? But we should know that, you know, politicians are not going to solve problems for us. In fact, history tells us that they usually create more problems for us. Right? You know, sometimes people criticise the Hare Krishna movement for not being very well organised. Although, you know, at least around here we're relatively well organised. But since Rupa was just telling me that the market, you know, the wholesale market in Footscray, where we go and buy our flowers and buy our vegetables, they've been planning to move the wholesale market to Epping for the last decade. And it was supposed to be there 3 years ago, but it's still not. And, you know, they're 3 or 4 years behind schedule and $300 million over budget. Right? And now the fruit and vegetable growers have banded together and they've decided we're going to create our own market, we'll do it by ourselves and we'll put it in Dandenong. Right, so now so same with the you know, this desalination plant down in Wontagi. Right, you know, how many millions of dollars have they blown on that? So, you know, just because it's the government doesn't mean that it's well organised or that, you know, it's being done properly. In fact, more likely than not, it isn't, because as Prabhupada says here, not the so-called public leaders who are unable to see what is going to happen 5 minutes ahead. In this age, the people in general, as well as their so-called leaders, are all unlucky fellows. Because we're all stuck with each other in the Kali Yuga. Then Prabhupada says they're always disturbed. So, you know, the so-called leaders of men profess to be interested in the welfare of all. But actually it's not a fact. They're generally self-interested. But the quality of a devotee, or the quality of a transcendentalist who is naturally a devotee, as Prabhupada says here, that's the nature of a transcendentalist, is that they're a devotee. Is that they're interested in the welfare of others. That's characterised by Vyasadeva. He's looking into the future and he's seeing the difficulties and he's meditating. What can I do for the benefit of the people in general? Vanasramanam yad. Of all the statuses and orders of life. So, you know, there are variously described 28 qualities, 26 qualities of a devotee. And usually what's the first quality? Anybody know what the first quality of a devotee is usually described as? A test. Not mentioned in the purport. Compassion, yeah, kripalu or karunika. Kripalu, it means mercy. A devotee is merciful. In the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, 11th chapter of the 11th canto, description is given. 28 qualities of a devotee. First one is Kripalu. A devotee cannot tolerate seeing the world merged in ignorance and suffering the whiplashes of Maya. Therefore, he busily engages in distributing Krishna consciousness and is called Kripalu, or merciful. You know, why Prabhupada translated the Bhagavatam? Why? Because he was Kripalu, merciful. He wanted to give people an opportunity to access spiritual knowledge. He knew the dangers of the age of Kali, but he also knew the benefit of distributing the Bhagavatam. This is merciful. Karunika is another verse in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, 25th chapter, Karunika, which is described also as merciful. Tatichava Karunika. Surida Sava Dehiram. Surida means what? Friend. Sava Dehiram means to everybody. The devotee is merciful and a friend of everyone. And again, Prabhupada says, a devotee of the Lord, a sadhu is a devotee. So really, only the devotees can be, you know, kind and merciful to others. Of course, one of the problems is, especially in Kali Yuga, even though a devotee is kind to others, they don't appreciate it. Right? It's like preaching to a dog. He's probably just going to bark at you. Right? Not going to appreciate. So, you know, being a devotee is sometimes trying to be merciful to others. It's sometimes a thankless task, like being a parent, right? You give your children good advice and they say, get lost. Or they may not say get lost, but they'll just ignore you. Huh? Any parents had that experience? Huh? That's what I used to do to my father. I just ignored him. Which is the equivalent of saying, get lost. And it'll happen, you know, even though our children are saintly, still they also can be rascals at the same time. Even I see it amongst the devotees. I give them an instruction, do this, and then I come back the next day and they're doing the thing opposite to what I told them to do. So, a devotee is merciful, but at the same time, one has to be tolerant. Karunika. Tatichava Karunika. One has to be tolerant and merciful. Or Akritadroha in the 11th canto, which means even if someone is offensive towards a devotee does not become offensive in return. And Prabhupada gives some examples. A devotee is merciful, but that mercy is not appreciated, and so consequently, in the course of trying to benefit, to give benefit and to elevate others, there are obstacles. There's three examples that Prabhupada gives in this purport in the third canto. Anybody know who those three examples are of tolerance in a devotee? Or just see if you can think of three examples of tolerance. Haridas Thakur. Why is Haridas Thakur an example? Why is he given as an example? Huh? He was beaten in 22 marketplaces, Prabhupada says. Beaten in 22 marketplaces. Why was he beaten? Why was Haridas Thakur beaten? He was a devotee. He was chanting. He was a Muslim who was being respected by the Hindus. That infuriated the Muslim leaders. What to speak of the Hindus as well. Ramchandra Khan was so envious. He should have been a devotee. Ramchandra Khan, he's a Hindu of sorts. But he was envious of Haridas Thakur. So then he wanted to make Haridas Thakur fall down. So he spoke to the local prostitutes. And they selected one of the youngest and most attractive to break Haridas Thakur's vow. So what did he do? He was just chanting Hare Krishna. But because he was chanting Hare Krishna, that agitated people. And he was recognized, respected, worshipped. Actually, he was worshipable personality. You know, Advaita Acharya recognized the qualities of Haridas Thakur. And despite Haridas Thakur's protest, Advaita Acharya would, give him preference. Haridas Thakur would say, no, don't, you'll upset so many people. And Advaita Acharya said, no, I know the conclusion of the Shastra. So the prostitute went to see Haridas Thakur and revealed her intentions. And it's interesting, Haridas Thakur, didn't, it's interesting how he responded. He said, she said, you're most handsome and attractive, if I can't have union with you, then how can I keep my body and soul together? She flattered him. And she was attractive. Most men would fall for something like that. Ramchandra Khan said, I'll send the constable with you and we'll catch you and bring him back and punish him. But she said, no. Let me go by myself. And then when I'm successful, then we'll come back again. So Haridas Thakur said, certainly, whatever you want, I'll fulfill your desire. But I've got my rounds to chant. I've got to chant my rounds. I've taken a vow to chant, 1 million names in a month. So 300,000, although that doesn't make sense because 300,000, that's 3 days worth, isn't it? Anyway, whatever. I calculated once. Basically, Haridas Thakur was chanting three lots of 64 rounds a day. 196 rounds or something like that. Can you imagine? If you were chanting three lots of 64 rounds a day, how much time would you have for doing anything else? It takes me 8 hours to chant 64 rounds, so that's the whole day gone. But he was chanting that much and doing other things as well. But naturally, he had quite a few rounds to chant. He said, I'll be happy to fulfill your desire, but I have to chant my rounds. Once I've finished my rounds, then I'm free to do what I like. So animosity towards Haridas Thakur, but he wasn't inimical back. He was only thinking of the welfare of the prostitute.